Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Is on the brink of disaster. World crime is at an all-time high. And the only thing standing between order and chaos is us.
Hey, terrorists! Terrorize this!
Hello, welcome to another episode of Rewatchability. It's the podcast where we revisit movies and TV shows from the recent past to see how they hold up today. I'm J.M. McNabb, and I'm joined, as always, by...
Robert Larone.
And Blaine's out. He's on assignment this week. So we're joined by a very special guest. He's been on the show before. It's our friend Sina Ramani. Hey, Sina.
Hello. Hello. So good to be back. I love this podcast. I've been listening to it for years, and so it's so fun to be on it.
That sounded forced and insincere.
Blink twice if you're under duress.
No, I love you guys. I'm a patron. I'm paying to be on this podcast.
That's true.
Not much, albeit.
We are an Entertainment One podcast, and we're here this week for a special July 4th episode. It's hopefully should be going up on the July 4th weekend, and to celebrate America's independence, we are going to talk about the most American movie we could think of, and that is
American
of course,
Gigolo.
No.
Okay.
Did you watch the wrong movie again?
Maybe.
Ip Man 4.
We watched Team America World Police. It's a 2004 comedy starring puppets made by, I guess, just Trey Parker directed it, right? Not the other one?
Yeah. I think so.
They don't
do like a Coen Brothers thing, do they?
I think they kind of do. Well, yeah, because the Coen Brothers, but that was for like guild reasons or something, right? We're off topic. We're going to talk about Team America. It's a big movie. You know, I was surprised to learn that it actually didn't make that much money at the box office because, like,
really?
It only made like $50 million or something. And I thought this was a movie that everyone had seen, like, to the point where Matt Damon can't walk down the street without being harassed because of this movie. But I guess a lot of people probably saw it on video. What about you guys? Well, maybe we'll get to Rob in a minute because, Sina, I know when you first saw this movie because, coincidentally, Rob suggested this movie. You were already lined up as the guest, and we actually saw it together.
Yeah, we did. We saw it in high school together.
We weren't in high school.
We were in high school. No, it's college. It's true. Yeah, university. We had started university by then. I just associate South Park with high school because that's kind of when I watched it. I didn't really watch it a lot, but this movie I was amped for it. I mean, I liked the first one, the first movie they made, the South Park movie, but this one
that wasn't the first
together.
Movie they made.
That's not true. Yeah, it's true. I meant them. Yeah, that's true. It's not their actual they by the pairing, but that, you know, in my head, these guys, you know, I only heard of them ever after South Park. So, you know, I saw the South Park movie and I was excited for this, and yeah, we saw it together in Toronto, and I didn't like it then, and I don't like it now.
Well, my memory of it was that you and I, and maybe one of our other friends, I can't remember, it was like an advanced screening. It was before the movie. Maybe I'm wrong, because I was also reading up about this movie, and it turns out they like just barely finished it, like before the movie. Like they couldn't even screen it for press before the junkets, because they didn't even have a print of it. it was that down to the wire. So I'm kind of surprised, but I'm really quite sure we saw it like the week before it came out at some kind of special screening. Am I making that up?
I don't know. We could have. You did these things because you always chase. You had your sort of nose to the ear to the ground, or whatever that expression is for these things.
My nose and ear were on the ground.
You had a nose and ear doctor appointment. Yeah, no, I could see that happening, but either way, it was not good.
I remember being disappointed by this movie.
Wow.
Not for the same reasons. Actually, probably a lot of the same reasons that we'll get into now. But like, I was the same. I really, by this point in time, maybe I don't know if I even still watch South Park anymore. Probably not. But we were in high school when it came out, and the movie, the South Park movie, like you said, was certainly a big deal, as were, yeah, some of the other movies. One we've talked about on the podcast before is Basketball, which was a big movie for me. But yeah, this one was kind of a letdown. Like, it was also like, I wasn't the most politically active kid. You were certainly more than me, but like, we were all wrapped up in the anxiety and outrage surrounding the Iraq war. And and this was right before, you know, the 2004 election. It seemed like this movie was going to be, it was kind of positioned to be like this key satirical work during this anxious time. Like, that's what it judging from the title.
That's the way it was pitched, because these guys were the bad boys. But I mean, we should talk about it, but what about Rob? Sorry, I started to host your own show, but
no,
what about
fine.
Rob's? Because we're getting into the details.
Yeah, wow. I don't want to get into the details, but I do know, I think
you're
Rob
right,
said that you hadn't seen this before.
It was pitched as like the radical, it was pitched as kind of like their take on Bush's America.
Right.
You know, it was kind of like, I forgot too, I was like, whoa, this is a Bush movie. This is like a, and it's like, and it's preoccupied with Bush's America, like TM, trademark, whatever. Like, it really is in there. So yeah, you're right. It was kind of marketed that way.
Yeah. And Rob, I don't think you ever saw this, right?
No, I didn't. I remember it happening. I remember the sort of cultural phenomena of it. And I remember like a lot of people, a lot of my friends liked it. But I was never a big South Park fan. I always found it a little bit too crass for me. And although, you know, I think that I do have like a certain respect for those guys and the work that they do. You know, sometimes it's funny. Sometimes it's, you know, very pointedly satirical. Sometimes they are dicks and sometimes they are juvenile. But I've never really sort of enjoyed their stuff enough to go and seek out this movie. But I also thought that, you know, it's a movie that a lot of people do like. It was a big film. And we're kind of in a, I don't know if it's a similar place, but it's a place where you can sort of draw parallels anyway, talking, you know, about America right now. I mean, the difference then is that everybody was like, you know, sort of caught in this like patriotic, rah-rah, like America, fuck yeah, circle jerk, which this movie was a handy antidote to. Now, I mean, America, it's a lot different. And it's still very scary, but in a different way. I don't know what it has to say about the world that we live in today, but I was kind of interested to see whether it said anything at all.
Well, I think there's certainly something to be said in terms of like the way people behave today and like tracing that back to Team America and South Park. Like, I don't, you know, we could maybe do a South Park episode in the future. I don't want this to just be a referendum on South Park, but like, certainly there have been a lot of think pieces in the past few years about like, did South Park kind of breed the kind of like alt-right internet trolls that kind of dominate the Twitter sphere these days. I don't know. I think there's something to be said about that, and certainly, yeah, I mean, we'll talk about the politics of South Park. I don't think that's avoidable when we get into the show. I was thinking about watching it now, like, and my disappointment with the movie. I think like my fandom of South Park, being like a teenager when it first came on and watching those first few years and really up to the movies, I think when I kind of dropped off for the most part, like we kind of watched that show. We were at the age where we were watching it before it really got to the sort of political stuff, right? Like, I kind of liked those guys, like, even when they were commentating on stuff like in the South Park movie, they were mainly like, you know, tackling like their own controversies. They were addressing like censorship and media and parenting, you know, like all of these things were kind of wrapped up in the discussion of the show itself. Like, I think after I stopped watching it is when it became this very, like, you know, it was tackling the issues of the day and very, very quickly.
Right.
Was the other thing. But yeah, I more like them for like the absurd stuff. The, you know, like my favorite thing those guys ever did will always be basketball. I can't see a world
basketball. I can attest to JM's obsession with basketball. Wow. It like got into his kind of personality's like genome, and he would like quote it. He still quotes it sometimes subconsciously in some of his mannerisms. I still detect a hint of basketball.
It's the same with if Blaine were here, he would say the same thing. He's also a big basketball fan. But let's get into Team America, because there's a lot to talk about. Rob, do you want to run down the plot of the movie?
I will try. It's very convoluted. It starts in Paris, France, America's greatest enemy. And it starts kind of cleverly with like the marionette, and then, you know, because we know this is going to be a puppet movie, and then it sort of zooms out, and the puppet's being puppeted by a puppet. Huh? That's good. I like that.
It's like some Being John Malkovich shit.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's very artsy. But we see there's this small boy with, you know, chocolate staining his face, and he's just having a lovely French day when he runs into some big, scary Arab men. And these Arab men have a briefcase. Of course, they are terrorists, and they're going to do some terrorizing in France. But luckily, Team America, the world police, are here to save the day, France being solidly in their jurisdiction. They, you know, come down and they, like, shoot up the terrace. There's a big gunfight, and they win for freedom, but not without a price. One of the Team America members, while he is proposing to his love, gets shot by one of these mean, scary, evil terrorists and dies. And that is the beginning. It's, you know, full of action and drama and Sturm and Drang.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that leapt out to me this time was I was impressed by the how authentic the action movie beats felt. Like, mm-hmm. A lot of times you watch a parody and they, you know, they kind of get one or two things right. But this felt like the music, the way the sort of action choreography was done, like it felt like, you know, a Bruckheimer movie or something like that.
Yeah, and that's definitely what they're like, one of their primary sources of parody, or Michael Bay, who they mention by name in song later.
I mean, I don't know if we want to get right into like the kind of like racist overtones of the movie.
Yeah, no,
you want to wait to get that probably later?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the thing. Like, so with this is kind of my global view. These guys are experts in what they know, which is film and television, right? Like, they know that stuff. They know it well. It's like in their own, it's like, it's how it's written. So like the conventions, the beats, as you put it, right? Like they had a whole song about montages that's taking place during a montage, for instance, later. Like, this is what they know. But the problem though is that parody, it's a formal parody, right? Like they're periodically kind of restaging old American Hollywood action movie cliches, mm-hmm. right? Like that's the baseline description. That's how they would describe it. And like other, and you know, Top Gun, things like that, like jingoistic stuff, right? I mean, even the title, right? Like Top Gun, Top Gun kind of haunts this movie as much as anything else. And I love the fact that
it was literally created to help enlist people in the military. Yeah.
So, right. So like the American sort of military industrial complex needs Hollywood. And this was the topic of our last show, actually, with embargo.
I was wondering how long it'd be till we got to the military industrial complex.
But that's the thing. Inside of this movie, it looks like a critique. The intention of the authors put forward by them says we are critiquing these. We are periodically reperforming these old hackneyed action cliche movies of the 80s, 70s, whatever, 90s, right? Like that's what they're doing at the baseline level. But then the content of what they're doing is this is where it runs into an issue, because then they take the stock characters of American news culture and American sort of politics at that time, the sort of contemporary moment, which is, by the way, America is occupying not just Iraq, but also Afghanistan, right? There's like in total probably 500,000 troops in the Middle East that are literally occupying West Asia, we should call it, like is literally occupying two huge countries. So this movie comes out in the context of two really violent American sort of military enterprises. Things that we haven't seen since, like a scale of military intervention that we hadn't seen in like 50 years. So the fact that like to them, the content is just kind of secondary. Like they don't care. Right? Like, they don't give a shit about any of this stuff. And it's not their, you know, someone could come back and say it's not their job to give a shit. Like, okay. But in reality, though, when they apply their we offend everyone politics, which is all their politics is, right? It's so we're going to offend everyone. All the substance of what they do is nothing, right? Like for good parody, good satire, people forget this. Satire is a means to an end. Right? It's something that gets you representation, like that allows, it's like the court jester making fun of the king and the king being too stupid to figure it out. Now these guys think they're the court jester, but they're fucking the king too, right? Because they're the producers of their own shit. So they're performing for what basically their peers and their audience. And that's why the real sort of purpose of this movie is to lampoon liberal Hollywood for its, you know, limpid resistance to American imperialism in Iraq. That's really what it comes down to.
Well, I think there's kind of two things happening with this movie that I think, like, we were kind of talking before we started recording, like, the sort of main defense of this movie that I'm not totally convinced of, but you could argue, like, the sort of talking about this first scene, talking about, like, the scary Arab man, like, it is an offensive portrayal. It's done in a tasteless way, but it takes place within the world of an action movie. And I think they would say that they put that there, and they put, you know, they have like the Homeland music playing as, you know, we see him. Like, I think that if you ask them, they would say, well, we did this to, you know, lampoon the way Hollywood kind of demonizes people from this region.
Or even the way that America views people from that region.
Totally. Yeah. And I think that's fair. I don't think the movie ever drives it home enough to like make that clear to, you know, 90% of the audience. Well, I think the big problem with that and with the movie as a whole is the movie's kind of doing two things. It's making fun of action movies. It's the central thesis of the movie is basically like, don't take any kind of political inference from Hollywood, from action movies, from it's all fake, it's all stupid. I mean, there's a reason why the central
character, it's all fake, it's all stupid. Yeah, that's
it's
the
all
thesis.
Stupid. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But
that's the entire South Park thesis too. It's all stupid.
It kind of, yeah, exactly. Which we'll talk about more, I'm sure. But I think it is at its core trying to take down movies and Hollywood and the way Hollywood kind of frames real world events. Now, I think they came up with this idea, and it was a solid idea. And then, like, some of the most, like, impactful, you know, global events happened in the court. Like, they wrote this movie, or the first draft of this movie, like, before the Iraq War ever happened. And so as they kept plotting
along. But after 9/11, though?
I don't know. I couldn't find that out. But I wonder. I don't know. Probably. But I think that the way, especially, like, we were talking about how it comes out before the election, I think they kind of had this idea of doing an action movie with puppets, satirizing Hollywood, and then kind of as that gained steam and as that kind of necessarily had to reflect what was happening in the world, it became this other thing. And the movies trying to straddle that balance of lampooning both is where it kind of falls apart for me and kind of renders all of it null. But I'm sorry, we've gone on a few detours.
Yeah.
Rob.
We're only in the first scene.
We have to go to Broadway where it's a very, I love the miniature Broadway that they construct.
Yeah, that was very well done. The aesthetics of the movie are fun, but they get tiring after like 5 minutes.
Yeah. And we get to see a bit of a musical called Lease, which is an obvious parody of The Lion King.
Yeah.
Rent. And here we meet Gary, who is the protagonist of the film, and he's singing a song called...
Oh, God.
Yeah, I mean...
It's just, this is typical them. Like, they're like, let's take something sad and make fun of it. they're not smart. Like, that's what it comes down to. Like, good parody, good satire requires intelligence. These guys are not intelligent. They're cynical. And they watch a lot of TV. Like, it's like Trump. They're actually like Trump in that way. Like, Trump is a smart guy only insofar as he knows how to, like, manipulate media. Otherwise, he's just an oaf.
So you're saying the politics of Donald Trump are a lot like the AIDS song from Team America World?
It's the same. Like, there's nothing at stake in either of them in any of it. The point is, you hear something a lot in the news, and you make fun of it for your people who eat it up.
I would disagree with this scene. I think I kind of chuckled because I think the joke is not that the song is about something terrible. I think the joke is that musical is about something terrible, and it's a musical, and then they cut to the audience and it's all like people all dressed up, probably pretty like rich, like bobbing their heads to the song about AIDS. I mean, the kind of ironic thing about that is, like, I felt like I had a similar experience going to see The Book of Mormon, which is the...
Isn't that funny? You either live long enough, you die the enemy or whatever. What's the line from Dark Knight? Like,
yeah,
it just became that.
But I went to go see The Book of Mormon because, like, my wife wanted to go, and I think I got her tickets for her birthday.
People love it.
And I wanted to go see it because, you know, like, there's a lot of stuff these guys have done that I like. And I went, and it was just so weird to have that like mental reset of being like, wow, like when South Park came out, like my parents' friends didn't want them watching it. Like, teachers were upset about like people wearing t-shirts. It was controversial.
Yeah.
They aired it at midnight because people complained after they aired it at 9:30. It was like a big deal. It was this controversial, edgy thing. And to go from that to like these guys wrote a musical and we paid like $200 to go see it, and we're sitting with a bunch of rich people with white hair, and they're all dressed, and I was just like looking around like,
they were like bussed in from the suburbs to watch The Book of Mormon.
Yeah, and there's like making jokes that are like offensive jokes. I'm like, I don't know about that joke. And then I look around and like I see some, you know, rich 70-year-old dude laughing at him, and like, now I really don't like that joke. It's like, it was just so weird
Exactly it. That's like the intention of the authors is irrelevant. It's how it lands. And I actually want to question the intention thesis that these guys have, because whatever, we could talk about libertarianism, but you're right. Like, exactly what you said was right. The people who find this funny are supposedly the targets of it. Like, what does that say, that the targets of it, like the status quo, so to speak, right? Like, or like, it doesn't, like, to make fun, like, this movie ends with Alec Baldwin, right? Like, putting aside the F word stuff, like, so for instance, what you were saying earlier about the AIDS, like the AIDS thing, okay, on its face, like, fine, you could make fun of the Rent thing. If they were here, they would defend themselves and say, oh, we're making fun of the fact that they like took this very serious crisis of like that affected like millions of people and like basically tore a lot of like parts of New York out, like ripped up the parts of sort of New York, certain artist communities, and you profited off of it and turned it into this like cheesy theater piece, right? Fine, like La Boheme shtick. Fine, you can say that. But at the heart of that, though, like, that's the beginning of something funny, right? But that's all those guys have. All they have is to say, it's stupid to make a musical about AIDS. It's like, okay, now it's also stupid to do that about other shit. So now what? Like, bring something else to the table other than saying it's stupid. But then when you combine that, that's only if you like read that scene in isolation. But if you combine that with the fact that these guys, every opportunity to drop the F-bomb, which is to say F-A-G, I don't want to say it, like these guys do, right? It's literally written. I mean, these guys really like made a career. Like, it's almost like Eddie Murphy and Delirious levels of homophobia, right? Like, and it's played off as, oh, they're just part of like the many people we make fun of. But the bad people, the people who are like the object of the most derision in the movie, are part of FAG. The Film Actors Guild. Yeah, Film Actors Guild.
In real life, it's SAG. It's the Screen Actors Guild.
Yeah, and it's like, wow, that was really funny. Like, that's literally what you would do in like 12 years old. Like, these guys, I mean, it's just such a trite thing to say, but it's true. But these guys never grew up. They just did the same thing over and over again. And they actually are the guys from Basketball. Like, that's them. Like, that they really are. And I think that's why Basketball works, because it's really just them. It's them and their stupid little sport that they made up for their dopey fans. That's kind of dumb and racist, and like dumb and racist movie, like, and sexist and whatever. Like, fine, go, like, but there's not much in that. There's not much, but these guys have turned this into this massive cultural empire. And sorry, I'm ranting again. I'll stop.
Well, okay, let's move on to the next scene.
Okay, well, so he gets a shadowy visitor, and this visitor invites him back to his limo, and after some mixed messages, they get to telling him that they want him, as the world's greatest actor, to go undercover or act like a terrorist. That way he can help foil this terrorist plot, which he explains is going to be worse, is going to be as bad as 100 9/11s, which is a lot. And, you know, he meets the whole team. There's a bunch of other dudes, and there's two girls, so there's like a love triangle that's starting to form. And they ask whether he's willing to be a hero for his country, or there's the door, and it's funny. He takes the door and he leaves. And
yeah, he's a reluctant hero.
Joey Campbell.
Yeah, they actually apparently they said that they read. You'll appreciate this, Cena. They read the Joseph Campbell stuff before making this movie to hit every cliche from every movie you've seen.
Yeah, that's. I mean, like, yeah. I mean, but they also didn't really need to, because they've seen these movies. Like, yeah. they're shrewd. This is their talent. They're shrewd sort of watchers of movies. They're basically podcasters, like sort of close reading podcasters. Like, I mean, they have other talents, but like the intellectual sort of strength of this is 100% rests upon their critique of certain cultural forms and conventions of American sort of late capitalist Hollywood. Period. That's it. That's all they can do. Like, there's nothing else outside of it, which is the problem with the satire, which is like, it sucks the sort of force out of it because it's just malnourished. It doesn't have anything undergirding it. It's like, you know, Jonathan Swift writes about eating babies, but underneath that is a lifetime of sort of work writing about the poverty, like, you know, a bunch of different things going on. Like,
and he really
letters.
Ate babies. He put
and
his
he really
money where
babies.
His mouth was.
But anyways, so this is those scenes again are just like, oh.
Well, God. I mean, okay, I really didn't want to be the one defending this movie.
<'cause> But apparently you are.
I don't like it very much. But I will say, I think these guys like know how to construct a good joke. Like, I think this movie works best, and I think their humor works best when they are just leaning into pure absurdity. Like, there's the best jokes about this movie are just when they have jokes about the fact that it's puppets, like when the puppets are dancing, or when they, you know, place the puppet
in
like a
real world
location.
But that's one joke that they make through the whole thing. That's this one joke over and over again.
It's funny.
Like that's the thing. The form is the joke. Right? Like, the format of the movie and how it's made, its production, is half the joke of the movie.
Well,
which actually is not bad.
That should be enough.
Yeah. But then they had to sort of go out of the way and make it a political allegory of a sort of satire. They wanted that controversy, and they wanted it wasn't good enough to sort of do that, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so they transform this actor surgically into...
Oh, God. I forgot about this.
This part, it's crazy. He's like the, I mean, he just has like splotches of, it looks like pubic hair on his face.
Yeah.
And brown makeup.
So offensive. Oh, wait, my God.
But again, that's the thing that happens in movies. Yeah, like that's the joke. Like there's literally one, it's I think You Only Live Once, or You Only Live Twice, the James Bond movie where he has to go undercover in Japan and just gets this horribly offensive makeup job where he just looks like Sean Connery with, like, you know, a weird eye thing. Like, it's a thing that's happened in movies. So I don't know. I think, yeah, the whole first chunk of this movie, I just read as like an indictment of the way movies kind of depicts race to a certain extent.
It's not an indictment. It's not an indictment. It's laughing at. There's a difference.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. You're right. It's not an indictment. Like, it is.
And then when it's just laughing, this is the problem. When it's just laughing and just being like, look how stupid that is. And you recreate the thing that's bad, then you're also just making it worse because you're giving license and you're normalizing something that, like just alone on its face, the Durka Durka Muhammad Jihad stuff, like that gets them against the wall, in my view. I mean, I'm not speaking literally here, but like this
Wait, you're
movie,
speaking literally?
I'm not speaking literally here.
Like, you're saying who do you want to murder exactly?
Like that like puts this movie against the wall in terms of like, wait, did you just act? Because imagine, I mean, look, we were raised on the, like, remember the prequels? How there were like all like blackface, there was like a Stephen Fetchett character, and there was like a Charlie Chan character, and there was just like, what are we, and it was just normal, it was acceptable, right? But like the supposed smug kind of like libertarian, like, I know that's bad, but I'm gonna do it anyways because I say that it's bad and I want to point out that it's bad. But
yeah,
they
totally.
Still
it's,
like
yeah.
saying it, they You're still right. enjoy
it's,
saying it,
it's
they
not an indictment.
Like
It's
F-A-G. They like spelling it out.
It's pointing out something bad and having way too much fun doing it. It kind of reminds me of like when Quentin Tarantino like writes movies where he has to say the N-word.
Yes, exactly.
Like, I'm saying
which
this
is like
a
the
bad
center
word,
of his career.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, I sort of see like a little bit of a difference between the Durka Durka thing, which I think that they are maybe trying to say this is how Americans or how American movies do view everybody from other cultures. Like in American action movies, they're not speaking the real language. They're just speaking gibberish. I think it's supposed to be like obvious to us and we're supposed to like see that. Where I think it is like straight up racist, and I don't think that there's any satirical excuse, is the Kim Jong-il use of the... you know, classic Asian stereotype of exchanging L's and R's.
Oh yeah,
they just want to do that. That's
exactly.
What's fun for them. They like they get their rocks off being racist on TV, and then they later whitewash it and say like, oh, it's fine. It's just comedy.
Well, that's the other thing I wanted to say about this very point, this defense of it, where I do think that the movie is structured to be like, this is a movie world, this is a Hollywood American movie world, and these are the things that we're pointing out, and like we've said, that they have too much fun doing it, they kind of revel in it to an uncomfortable point. But then the kind of other strike against them is that they do the same thing on South Park without this kind of like structure of a political satire. Like they just do it in random episodes where you know they're voicing different characters, or they're, you know, sending the kids to the Middle East, whatever it is. Like they clearly just enjoy doing that. I mean, it's also hard to get offended at them because they're doing it to be offensive, and it's almost like you don't want to give them the satisfaction of.
But the problem is later when your friend's in the schoolyard, case in point, our friend that we saw this with, when he's still, who still sometimes says Durka Durka, still, I think I heard him say it a few years ago, I think. I may be making that up, but he said it recently. And like, and like that's it's not about intention versus how it lands. And I think I said that earlier. It's actually bigger than that, because like the moment you circulate these old you know, for lack of a better word, tropes and kind of signifiers and, you know, like LNR and like switching up LNR or even the whole thing about North Korea, like the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. It's not called North Korea anyways, but like we can't even get the name right, but it's like the stand in for evil, right? Like, oh, the dictatorial regime and all this stuff. And it's like a kind of like, it's a paragon of evil and Asiatic, it's what, you know, in Orientalism, the book by Edward Said, he calls it Asiatic despotism or Oriental despotism, right? And so Kim Jong-il and now his son, like they've been these parodied as these characters. I actually now want to do an episode of my podcast, which is called The East is a Podcast, if you don't know it, on just mashing up different Hollywood obsession with the DPRK. Because this is one of them, right? Like later on, there was something. There was The Interview, yeah. Right? And it's like it's. But like, here's the thing that you don't say: Americans killed, I think, over a million Koreans in the Korean War, North Koreans in the Korean War, like a huge chunk of their population, right? And so there's this weird obsession with going back and making fun of the people you killed, who are now threatening to you. And why? Jesus, Kelsa Breeze. Like they develop nuclear weapons, they develop ballistic missiles. They're armed to the teeth, and for a good reason. Right? Like you can put aside whatever life is life in North Korea, but try to understand it from their view that like, why are we antagonistic to the outside world? Maybe because the entire world, including the UN, invaded that country and like tried to overthrow their government. So it's like, these are rational, intelligent, like unsexy, unfunny ways of talking about North Korea. Or you could just be like Trey Parker or whatever his name is. Or is it Trey Parker? Yeah. And then just be like, oh, let's switch our L's on R's. Let's just do the same shit I was raised on. Like, it's such a frat boy thing. Like, these guys are criminal.
I think it's fair to critique the North Korean regime. I think that's fair, but this is not the way to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't know anything. These guys don't know shit. They're not like...
Yeah, I mean,
they don't,
Kim Jong-il was a target because George W. Bush made him a target by doing that whole Axis of Evil thing. And I think him as a public figure, he is fair game. But what's not fair game is using, you know, racial stereotypes to lampoon him. That doesn't... Yeah. You know, that's not acceptable at all.
Yeah. The point are the stereotypes. The point is to give yourself a license to perform this way and then retroactively say that, oh, it's comedy, parody, irony. You know, I mean, it's like it's typical.
Why is everyone so fucking stupid? Why aren't more people intelligent like me? I'm so lonely, so lonely, so lonely and sadly alone. There's no one, just me only, sitting on my rental phone.
So it's around this time that, yeah, the movie really like changes gears because we get into not just the Kim Jong-il stuff, but also we meet all the puppets that are modeled to look like real life movie stars. And they're all the kind of like, I mean, I guess most movie stars are left leaning other than like John Voight.
They're liberals. Let's put it that way.
They're liberals.
Well, they're specifically like the ones that were opposed to the war in Iraq and the ones who were outspoken, like Sean Penn and Alec Baldwin and Susan Sarandon and Tim Robbins.
And, but yeah, some of them are like really, like Liv Tyler. I don't remember seeing Liv Tyler say anything.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, this is where...
It just becomes axe grinding with your peers. Yeah. Like, let's make fun of our peers for daring to say anything.
It gets to it's at this point in the movie, like I even remember thinking this at the time. It's like, oh, this is more of like a you thing. Like this is this is less of like our concern and more of like, this is your industry and you have a problem. It's like them wrestling with their own celebrity in a way. Yes. Like they're so uncomfortable with being part of like the Hollywood establishment that they had to make a movie where they literally murdered the Hollywood establishment, but under the guise of being this, this broader political story. I don't know. Like,
didn't George Clooney play a huge role in their?
He did.
He it's that elite that made them.
He basically got South Park on the air. He helped set them up because the South Park, like, you know, demo or whatever, like the first short film they made, would get passed around at Hollywood parties. People would play it. And George Clooney was one of the people who said, hey, what is that? And he helped get the thing moving. Like, I mean, yeah, I think they're friends with all these people, or a lot of the people, except for Sean Penn. Sean Penn was very upset about this movie. Did you guys read about that?
Yeah, I did read about that.
He sent them a letter outlining exactly how upset he was about this movie.
Sean Penn can shove it.
That's it. Yeah, that's the only thing. Sean Penn is a garbage person, and
he's smug, hit up all the smug liberals you want, but their issue with them is not that they're smug liberals. It's that they're smug liberals who oppose the Iraq War. That's what unites them, because in their world, nobody could ever take an ethical stand against a war.
Right.
It's always for cynical reasons, because they themselves are cynical assholes who what's funny is that they actually had a kind of weird recuperation in Michael Moore's documentary, right? Bowling for Columbine, they played these kind of weird protagonists, like, if we only understood them, because they're from that town, right?
Yeah, they're from nearby. And actually, that's why Michael Moore was sort of included as a bad guy in this, because in Bowling for Columbine, they were interviewed, but then there is an animated section that sort of uses South Park style animation, but wasn't at all authorized or, you know, had anything to do with them. And so it made people think that, you know, they endorsed this movie and, you know, whatever Michael Moore was saying, but actually they didn't.
So, yeah, I remember seeing I think Matt Stone was in Bowling for Columbine, and yeah, they had a cartoon shortly after his interview. Well, it's talking like this, and it's done in the South Park style, but it's not actually made by them, and they were mad about that. I mean, that's the other thing. Like, I this movie annoys me because I have to keep defending people I don't like. Like, I really don't like Michael Moore. I think
they really don't deserve it either.
Yeah,
they do not deserve.
He's a terrible filmmaker, and you know, probably a bad person if you believe, you know, certain accounts. But, like, if you, you know, create a movie where it's like Michael Moore wants to destroy America, and, like, that's buying into this, like, absurd right wing.
And also, like,
point.
And deep, and the North Korea dictator, that, like, you're doing Bush's work for him. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are the guys. These guys, you could say, in some ways, helped the Iraq War with their first movie. Like, there was no need to have Saddam Hussein as a character in that movie, who's, like, literally fucking the devil. And, of course, they had to add on, like, a good heaping's worth of homophobia. But, like, that kind of dehumanization, forget of Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein is human garbage. But the fact that you can then, these guys are in service of a larger sort of imperialist project of designating certain countries as enemies and telling them, look at how bad they are. Look at how despotic they are. And because they located it around the so-called, like, dictators, personalities, whatever, like, they located around them, that's their kind of get out of jail for free card. But really, all they do is, like, watch MSNBC reports that are, like, probably made up about North Korea, and then they turn that into a movie the same way James Franco and fucking Seth Rogen did it too with that interview bullshit. Although that movie cost Sony. But, like, because it wasn't it supposedly the cause of the hack?
Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah.
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 Good. Good. Good for North Korean hackers.
No. We don't support North Korea hacking Sony.
Yes, we do.
Although I will say, there were some funny emails to get leaked.
Thank you. How many podcast episodes, how much research did they help those North Korean heroes? They helped a lot of us by exposing those
emails.
We're
not calling them heroes, for the record. No. Rewatchability does not endorse that statement.
I mean, let's just wrap up to the end of, like, the plot. Kim Jong-il is going to... He has a big peace conference planned with
the Film Actors Guild.
And they're going to destroy everything with all the world leaders there. And Gary has to learn how to act again because he doesn't believe in himself after the team gets captured. They go and they do that. And, they you know, kill them all, right? But I mean, the big thing is the speech. The speech that he gives is the dick so asshole stupid. Pussy speech. And this is what I think is the implicit message of the movie is that, like,
it's not implicit, it's explicit.
It's explicit. It's the implicit that I mean. It's the explicit point of the movie is that, yes, they sort of look at America as like this world police force that, yes, sometimes fucks a bunch of shit up, causes a whole bunch of collateral damage, but is ultimately needed. And I feel like that is like, that is just plainly stated. That is what they believe. Yeah. That is the point of this movie. Even though they're satirizing America, fuck yeah. Even though there's the country songs with the patriotism, they actually buy into that. Like they love it. They love who they are.
We're reckless, arrogant, stupid dicks. And the Film Actors Guild are pussies. And Kim Jong-il is an asshole. Pussies don't like dicks, because pussies get fucked by dicks. But dicks also fuck assholes. Assholes who just want to shit on everything.
That's, I think, what I think was the, like, you know, the ultimate disappointment of the movie, other than all the racism, homophobia, sexism, and other bigotry, is that, like, yeah, they, like, they actually just support the Iraq war.
Yeah, like, they're not oppositional. That's what this movie is. They're not, these guys are not oppositional. That's their greatest skill, is manufacturing this image of themselves as being oppositional. Well, really, what they're talking about, like, the whole thesis of the first South Park movie, and we loved it. I mean, I think I saw it with you, JM. No, I saw it with another friend. But we see, we,
what?
But,
which
like,
friend?
The whole thing
which
of
friend?
It was, which
what's
friend?
His name?
I saw it. But like, the whole thesis of it is like, why do you guys give us so much crap about how much we swear? Which, when I was like 16 or 17 or 18, like, I was like, yeah, this is a righteous issue. But it's just like about their own stupid little world of having to deal with censors. Like, it's, there's nothing interesting in that. It's just an excuse.
Well, I think there is, I haven't seen that movie in a long time, but I think there's something, there are more.
You guys did it on you guys did it on the podcast.
No,
right?
We haven't. Yeah. No.
Oh, you haven't? Really?
No. But I think they're more equipped to address that issue, whereas in this it feels
that's
like
they're
punching above
with
their weight, you know what I mean?
Yes,
like
yes,
they're
yes,
not
absolutely
ready for this. And yeah, the other thing I want to say is, like, I think there's a few fundamental problems with that. Well, for one thing, like, the movie, you know, and they kind of position themselves as like these punk rock edgy guys, and
no,
like you said, that speech at the end, like, it basically wraps up with like a bad New York Times op-ed.
Yes.
Few minutes.
Yes,
but
it's
also
a defense of the status quo ultimately.
But also, it's the, if like, basically the moral of the movie is a huge self-own, because we get to this point where the end of the movie is like, don't let Hollywood inform your political decisions. And it's like, right, wait a minute, this is a movie. This is a movie telling like, me its they, political position is not to listen to Hollywood. It's like a weird Ouroboros of like nonsense.
Well, I can see a difference in like a celebrity who is speaking out at like a red carpet award ceremony thing and, you know, expressing your political views through your art, I think is two totally different things. And you can argue that, you know, sometimes I think celebrities should shut up. I mean, sometimes they don't
most
know
of the time
about things.
They should.
Gwyneth Paltrow, I don't think, has anything good to say to people. So,
you know, the problem isn't that Gwyneth Paltrow has, you know, dumb opinions. I'm sure she does. The problem is that people give them a forum to espouse
that's
them
what it is.
Where they shouldn't. Yeah. Like, I was reading about the making of this movie, and it was, I think, their co-writer, Pam Brady, who said, like, they started writing the celebrity thing because they started seeing cable news putting actors on TV to talk about foreign policy when they're obviously not who should be talking about that.
Right.
But the problem is not that George Clooney has a thought about the Iraq war. The problem is the cable news is a diarrhea factory that needs
to... Which is also their source, right? Which is like, you can tell, like, these guys have never done any deep dives into anything to do with the world. Like, these guys just watch TV and they make TV. Like, this has to do fundamentally with the fun, like, just the basicness, in other words, of Hollywood. It's very low level. It's not intelligent. The things that we think are radically intelligent and critical turned out to be kind of lame. It's like, whenever I see Hollywood trying to like be smart and be critical and whatever, it's like, I can only think of that Garfield meme of him looking at a meme of himself with like a no sign. And he's saying like, gee, I wonder who that's for. And it's like, don't you get that? Like, you are the target. Like, as you said, it's like a self-own of like, bro, you are the status quo. You are Hollywood. Like, you show up to the Oscars in a dress. It's not funny that you show up in a dress. First of all, it's like, you think it's funny to like dress up as a woman and like wear a dress. It's like hilarious for them. Put putting that aside, but like, bro, you're still at the Oscars. Like, you're still like a hack at the Oscars. And like, Robin Williams is singing your grand song on the stage. Like, you're not an outsider. Like, they never have been.
Yeah, I wouldn't call them hacks because, again, I think that they're funny guys.
They are now. They do a lot of they good are work. Now.
I haven't watched the show in years, but I also like I love the music in South Park, which they're nominated for. So I don't want to, you know, completely get in the back. Interestingly,
they're
enough,
establishment. They're an establishment. They've always been the establishment. That's my only point.
Yeah, totally. Like that's been probably their biggest frustration, and I think that's what this movie is ultimately about. Which is why it was maybe a bit disappointing. Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back with trivia questions.
Woo!
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
We're back. It's Rewatchability. We're on the Entertainment One podcast network. We're talking about Team America World Police. It's a movie that I don't think any of us like that much. There were some jokes I really laugh at. They're mostly puppet-based jokes.
It's good that you can see the strings. It's funny. That's could say right. One nice thing about it.
And you know what? Like, there's no other movies like it.
Except
for the Thunderbirds movie.
No, that's what partly why this movie started.
Well, that's true. It was CG, right?
No, it was live action.
It was live action. Didn't they make a Thunderbirds movie?
Yeah, the Thunderbirds movie was
directed by Jonathan Frakes.
Directed by Jonathan Frakes, Commander Riker. And that's partly what got them to make this movie was they heard about the Thunderbirds Jonathan Frakes project and said like, "Oh, that'd be fun and like puppets." And they're like, "No, it's just going to be people." And they're like, "That's dumb. Someone should make a big puppet action movie." That's what got them thinking about this. Is Jonathan Frakes, lack of
failure.
Ambition? Yeah. Okay, I have some trivia questions for you. Question number one: the guy who does the voice of Spotswood, who's like the leader of Team America, is also a recurring actor on one of my favorite shows. I guess this question also relies on you knowing a bit about me, but what is it? What's the show, one of my favorites, that he's an actor on?
Red Shoe Diaries.
No.
Rescue 911?
No.
It's not William Shatner?
No, it's the actor is Darren Norris. And he plays Cliff on Veronica Mars.
Oh, which one was Cliff again?
He's their lawyer. And I always love it when he shows up. He's great.
Which one is Veronica Mars again?
Oh, come on. Also, I thought this was fun because they do most of the voices themselves. But Alec Baldwin is played by legendary voice actor Maurice LaMarche.
Ooh, it's the brain.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great. Okay, number two.
Marvin.
What did they put inside the Michael Moore puppet before they blew it up to give it that real, you know, Michael Moore exploding effect?
Watermelon.
Well, that's a good guess, but no. Rob?
Hot dog meat?
Oh, it's close. Ham. They put ham inside Michael Moore.
That's so clever. Michael Moore, if you didn't notice, is a large guess.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Sorry, Rob.
You don't have to say the F word.
That's all these jokes are. Isn't it funny that they're gay? Isn't it funny that they're fat? Isn't it funny that they're brown?
Michael Morris holding two hot dogs when they interview him. It's like, yeah, it's things you can make fun of him other than the fact that he might like hot dogs.
That's what's hacky about it. That's what's hacky.
You're right.
Yeah.
I just don't think I wouldn't call them hacks per se, because I think as misguided as a lot of this movie is and a lot of their work is and how much I don't agree with it, I think that they can still structure a funny joke. I mean, my favorite episode of South Park is a later one that I happen to see, or I don't know if it's my favorite, but what I really like is the one where they go to like the Pioneer Village And it's taken over by like jewel thieves or something, and they want to get into a safe, but everyone is still in character and refuses to acknowledge that they're not in a pioneer village.
Like another good one is the baseball one where they hate playing baseball. That's another good one. And the gamer one, like the Warcraft one.
Yeah, I think I saw that. Yeah, and they have like, go back and look at the shows. Like they have some like all-time
it's like the
bad,
Simpsons.
All-time bad takes on issues. Yeah. Like they I think they recently even like did kind of a mea culpa on their climate change. Like they did an episode about Al Gore.
Oh yeah, Man, Bear, Pig.
Yeah. But yeah,
because that's the thing. No one in that's exactly it. These guys, no one can ever have any political sincerity. I mean, yeah, fuck right. Al Gore. They should make fun of him. But like in their world, because they have no politics other than nihilistic. Like that whole thing at the end, dicks and asses and pussies. Like these are people who've never touched anybody else. Like it's all just orifice for them. Like it's like, you know what I mean? Like they have a very limited worldview, and to extract hours and hours of comedic material and narrative out of that. I mean, that's why they went back to the well that they knew with Book of Mormon. Mormons are easy to make fun of.
Yeah,
right?
True.
Like who's gonna defend them? Who has a big and who's gonna defend, you know, like
as a one time Mormon, I can say that.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know that about you.
Well,
read the book.
Read the book.
It's in there at the back.
I know. I've listened to Rewatchability many, many hours, and I didn't know that about you.
We've definitely talked about that because yeah, that's the sure. only time Rob and I talk.
I know that like you came from like a small town that was very religious, but I didn't know that it was.
I may not have been specific about it.
Oh, okay. See, close reader.
Okay, one last question. Team America originally began as a remake of what movie? Anybody know this?
A-Team?
I have no clue.
Not the A-Team? That's the only one I guess. That's my guess.
It's kind of a funny story. And
Shop Around the Corner.
I think the story of
You've
how this,
got mail.
I think the story of this movie, how this movie got made, kind of fills in a lot of gaps in terms of like why it's not a particularly potent satire, because it seems like they kind of just fell ass backwards into a lot of these issues. Because originally, they had the idea to do a puppet movie because of the Thunderbirds thing. And then they were given the script or read the script somehow for the as yet unproduced but already greenlit Day After Tomorrow, which
oh,
would
God.
Go on to star Jake Gyllenhaal. And they thought it was so stupid. And I think they heard something about like how it was greenlit just with a one sentence pitch, like climate change is destroying the world. And, you know, it was one of the Independence Day guys or something. So they thought that was really stupid. There's a stupid movie. They got a copy of the script. They thought, you know what we'll do? We'll make an all puppet version of the same script, the same movie, but with puppets.
Wow.
And we'll release it the day after it comes out and call it the day after tomorrow.
It's just gimmicks with these guys.
Yeah.
It's all they have is gimmick.
Pretty much. That would have been a gimmick. Yes.
I would have watched that.
I think the puppet Day After Tomorrow would have been hilarious personally, but they didn't do that because they realized that that would be infringe on a lot of copyright laws. But that idea morphed into doing like a different kind of or their own action movie, and you know, eventually
right.
became Team America. Yeah, so
that makes sense.
Like we talked about, Sean Penn did not like this. He wrote a sternly worded letter to them.
Fuck Sean Penn. Go to hell, Sean Penn. Sean Penn is a bad man, abusive.
He's not only an abuser, he's the world's worst novelist. So,
oh, right.
There's also that.
Did you read that?
No, but I read about it, and it sounded awful. Yeah, so he's terrible. You know, I was thinking about them and thinking about just how kind of this movie never digs into any kind of meaningful satire about and even kind of like you said, like reinforces like the George W. Bush doctrine. Do you guys remember they made a show about George W. Bush?
Yeah, like that's
oh,
my
yeah.
Bush or something else?
It's called That's My Bush.
Yeah.
And it was like it was so bad.
Yeah.
It was not
just like libs now. They're like resistant libs with Trump.
No, not even because they don't. Yeah. It's not even critiquing him or making fun of him. They just made like a 70s style sitcom that happened to be set in the White House with a George W. Bush lookalike. Like it, the kind of target of the satire was like how dopey 70s sitcoms were, if anything. And it was so strange. And again, it was, I remember culturally everyone kind of had the same reaction to it as we did to Team America. Cause there was this buildup like, oh my God, the South Park guys are doing a George W. Bush show. It's going to be South
Bush
Park.
Bush is going to get it now.
Yeah. And then it was just like a Three's Company type show with a guy whose name was George Bush. It was so strange. But yeah, that just popped into my head when we're.
That's the thing. Like, but being a contrarian, you don't have anything other than being a reactionary. Like, you literally have to wait until somebody, there's like a consensus on an issue or a broad consensus, and then you just take the opposite position. And like, that's it. And like,
well,
that's like the Reddit. That's like, I think in some ways, that's the Redditor brain we have, like the red pill. Is it red pill? Yeah. Or red pill, blue pill. I don't remember.
I don't know.
Like,
I got confused and I had to go to the hospital after 4 hours.
Corny. That's corny, Rob. But I'll allow it. But like, that's.
You're the guest.
I'm going to allow it.
I submit to his judgment.
But that culture of like snide, nihilistic, everybody's a phony. I mean, that's Holden Caulfield, and that's like the Redditor brain, right? And like these guys played a huge role in that. I mean, we were the audience, like our age, our demographic, and also our gender was the audience for this show. People who grew up on The Simpsons, on like early Simpsons too. Like this was like that. And then the trifecta came, the Holy Trinity was completed with the arrival of Family Guy. And we're still stuck with those shows. Like we're still stuck with like these dudes who like just won't give up whatever cash cow that they have.
But I think we are a little different because the show South Park started when we were in high school. So by the time of like Team America, I think the reason why we had that reaction to it is because we really kind of
aged out
of it. Yeah. Like I think the reason why people, you know, like I said, there's been a few op-eds about like what the South Park generation kind of ended up like politically. There's a good one by Sean O'Neill over at the AV Club, an older one. There's what, I don't know if you know the writer Dana Schwartz. She wrote an op-ed about it because she basically said something about South Park creating a generation of trolls and was immediately attacked by a lot of trolls who found that statement to be inaccurate. And she wrote a piece about that. So, but I think like we were able to kind of age out of it in real time, like you said, but for the people who were a little younger than us, like to get into that show and to kind of get like that dump of content where you're binge watching this show that goes, you know, down some really bad paths. I mean, the episode they do about like transgender people is, I can't imagine what that's like watching it now. I mean, it was cringy even being like pretty uninformed about those issues when it came out at the time, but like I'd have to go back and look up what it was like, but I think like it was a show that was reacting very quickly. Like they put the show out in like a few days or something, right? Yeah. Like did you guys read that? And I don't think it, like,
that's all their shows now. It's just like 4 days of like Adderall fueled, like like yuckity yucks, and like and they're also old too now. Like they're like, I don't know. Like the fact that they've kept it going so long that these guys have it's just an ATM. You know, like it really is. These guys were always like peak phonies.
But I will say again. I want to reinforce that I like it when they just find an absurd premise and don't.
You
try.
Like, that's why you like their movies, the early ones. Remember
JM Basketball.
JM was he? No, the earlier ones.
And Cannibal.
No, the earlier ones.
Yeah.
Cannibal was a Cannibal. And then the other one, Orgasmo.
I never liked Orgasmo that much.
Like, but the thing is, like, what they are, they have the same Kevin Smith independent sort of anti-hero energy. They started with that.
Yeah, okay, well, Cannibal was, like, just like a student film that got bought by Troma or something.
Right,
yeah.
Which is also how the animal part, the Animal House guys started, right? Like, it's a kind of, like, what today is now YouTube. Like, we all have YouTube now. But, like, back then, there would be kind of, like, incubators. And these guys were, like, indie filmmakers. And, like, there is a creative idea inside of their work usually, but it doesn't but it's like a spark that then never turns into anything other than kind of a smoldering mess. And I think the fact that, like, you know, the Orgasmo is, I mean, Orgasmo is a dumb movie. Cannibal is fun. It's, you know, it's ugly, but it's like fun, ugly. And Basketball is hilarious. Basketball is like their best stuff. I mean, it also has like some passive, some like the scene where they go to India and stuff. Of course, they can't help themselves being racist. They just can't help themselves. And that's what, if you're going to be a South Park fan, I'm not saying this to any of you, but but if you're going to be a South Park fan, at a certain point, you just say, this is excusable for me. This is excusable. I don't mind. And like, that's the issue we should have now is that like, why is it okay for you to accept these like suburban Colorado rich guys like depicting Africans in the same way that like 18th century genocidal like psycho British like population management theorists imagine Africans as like this unitary whole who are always clicking, like that was like their first season, right? Like who are starving. Like these images matter, and it's one thing to say, oh, we're giving America a mirror. It's like, no, bro. Like you're enriching yourselves off of these stereotypes, and you're throwing some in about Americans for good measure. But really, in the end, since there's nothing beyond you saying all of this is dumb and we should make fun of it, that's where it goes. And like the same way that The Simpsons now is just this like, you know, gallery of guest stars. Like the only thing that carries any episode forward, not that I've watched an episode in like a decade or a half, but like all the only show, the only time you see a commercial on, you're like, this week on The Simpsons, Marina, whatever, Abramovich shows up for some reason, like, like you know, and like that's it. And so, like, that's what the Sim propels the Simpsons, and that what's always propelled South Park and these guys has been like, the world is stupid, I'm stupid, the world is cynical, I'm cynical. That's it. Everything, anybody who tries at anything is bad.
Yeah,
guys, I really ranted during this episode. I talked for like 75% of this episode. I'm sorry.
So okay. You love this movie.
Poor Rob got like shouted down. He's like, I work here too, you know.
It's okay. I can overdub my opinions.
I just, you know, I picture like our American listeners right now are like, you know, standing at a barbecue, cooking up some burgers for the family.
Stars and Stripes cowboy hat.
Yeah. Just listening to
and
you
I'm here
scream.
Extolling, extolling North Korean hackers.
Once again, rewatchability and. Its affiliates do not endorse
it's
the
more offensive that it's more offensive that you defend South Park guys even weekly than my wholehearted, full-throated endorsement.
No, I'm not defending
North
them.
Korean.
Yeah. I think, you know, I think this
they
movie
suck.
Is an encapsulation of some of their worst stuff. But I like again, like I think that they're funny when they have an absurd thing that they do, not when they're trying to do something of any substance. Like there was. I did watch some episodes of like a recent season where did you read about this? Like the thing where Randy was a Kyle. No, not Kyle. The main one. Stan's dad, Randy was
who's the best character on the show.
Yeah. And he said like he could get Lord to come play at Stan's birthday or something. And then at the end of the episode, it's just him in a wig saying like, Lord, Lord, Lord. And clearly the joke is like, he couldn't get Lord to, he didn't have a connection to Lord. So he just put on a wig and did it himself. And then someone at Spin Magazine wrote an editorial being like, South Park has gone too far, like implying that Lord, like this beautiful young woman who writes these amazing songs is an old, looks like an older man or something. Like they totally missed the joke. So South Park wrote a whole arc about how like this guy with like a fedora and a trench coat was going door to door being like Spin Magazine, I've heard Lord is actually like an adult man, and then it comes out that Randy is actually Lord and like just through like auto tuning is performing all of these songs, and it becomes like the driving arc of the season.
That's pretty funny. I heard
it was really funny because again they had a
Mom.
just a almost surreal, ridiculous storyline that was foisted upon them, and they just ran with it. And yeah, and I think the lesson, looking back on it as an adult, is no one should get their political sensibilities from the guys that they also get their fart jokes from. Like, just because they're clever at some things doesn't mean that they should be like shaping anyone's worldviews. And and I would say that's incidental, except like they're so clearly trying to shape young people's worldviews. I mean, the whole speech at the end of this movie is like they both sides it. Like they do irresponsible to do now. I guess we're wrapping up. I think I know where we're going with this, but Sina, did you find the movie rewatchable?
Just burn this movie. Just burn it. Like, give it the Star Wars holiday special treatment and burn the negative.
Well, the Star Wars holiday special is great.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
Compared to this, at least that has some charm. But no, yeah, no, this movie's terrible. You shouldn't watch it. These guys are horrible. They're racist. They're terrible. They're not good.
Well, we just lost two listeners. The name of Trey Parker.
That's fine. It's fine to like racist people. It's fine, but that's what they are. Like, you have to just own it and be like, yeah, this is racist, period. But it's funny.
I was trying to imply that they were listeners and that they're not listening anymore.
No, they're not listening. They're too rich to listen to this.
I mean, a lot of people love that show. I mean, I still love episodes of that show, I'm sure. Like the
so do I. Yeah. I mean, I grew up on I was never a crazy watcher of it, but it was a big thing for guys our age. Like, it has a huge cultural footprint, not to the degree of The Simpsons, but like close.
Yeah, I mean, I also don't find it rewatchable. Not that I loved it to begin with, but yeah, it definitely makes me rethink a lot of what I liked about their earlier stuff. I mean, if we watched Baseball for the podcast, it definitely has some gross jokes in there, but I think it's more of a straight ahead comedy and is a bit better. I mean, they really lost me with the Book of Mormon, even though it's got some
people
good songs.
People love it though. That's been their comeback thing.
I know, but just the way, just like Broadway is just such a like undemocratic art form. It's like it always bothers me, like for so long on like movies and podcasts, people would just like reference Hamilton like we've all seen it. It's like, I haven't fucking seen Hamilton.
Right.
I don't know what happens now.
Spike Lee just made the movie.
It's not going to be on Disney, but like for so long, it's like, it's never played in a city I've lived in. And even if it did, I couldn't afford it. Like, why are you, it's not a cultural touchstone for everybody. Yeah.
Get down to the tickets booth.
But yeah,
they're just businessmen. In the end, these guys are just businessmen, and that's the biggest critique you can throw at them. It's like, bro, you're just salesmen like the rest of them.
Stop calling them bro. That makes me uncomfortable.
They are bro. They deserve bro.
Rob, what did you think? You'd never seen it before.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I really wanted to give it like a chance, and you know, we talked last week when we talked about Robin Hood about satire and how satire undoes itself sometimes, and you know, I really wanted to give it a chance, but it just really undoes itself by being so awful and racist and homophobic and enjoying it, and yeah, it just seems like really unapologetic about how crappy it is. And yeah, ultimately the message of the movie is terrible. Like, they were wrong. So, I mean, it's hard to support this movie. And it's kind of hard to see why people who are ostensibly progressive like this movie. Like, there are lots of people who I don't think are like reactionary or conservative who love this movie. And I wonder if it's just that they haven't, you know, taken a close enough look at it in the last 20 years, or whether or not, you know, it's just that we let this stuff fly so easily.
I think there's also like, there's some people that weirdly have just been like, even though I think our culture has like shifted away from a lot of these types of jokes, there's some people that weirdly have just been kind of grandfathered into, you know, keeping their slot as kind of like edgy, offensive comedians, like Larry David, like the not this past season, but the season before of Curb was like crazy racist.
Oh, really?
And like no one had a problem with it.
Because it's okay to be racist against brown people. It's okay. I mean, and this movie is example of it. Like Larry David's example of it. I mean, these are progressive liberal Hollywood types. And it's perfectly okay to say that all Palestinians want to murder Jews.
That's literally what happened.
That's blood libel. You're saying.
There were scenes where like he would just see like a brown guy in the street and then they would just start chasing him like a cartoon.
there's not any liberal tears over any of this because it's okay to do this stuff to brown people, to Muslims. I mean, it's just okay. It's just okay in America to do this stuff. It's acceptable and it's funny. It's a source of comedy for them.
Happy July 4th, everybody. Sina, what do you want to plug before you go?
Listen to my podcast. It's called The East is a Podcast. It's fun. We've got a ton of episodes. I have 300 trillion hours of content. Check it out. It ranges. Sign up for the Patreon. There's a ton of stuff behind there too. And follow me on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at Your Orientalist. You are Orientalist. Or just look up East is a Podcast and you'll find me.
And you're not going to plug our Star Trek podcast?
Oh, and of course. Well, I was going to let you do it, but it's been a while. We're supposed to do another one. Remember, Jan?
We'll do it.
We did a recap for Picard.
If anyone's seen that or watched that,
T. Earl Grey hot take. Check it out.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much for listening. As always, you can
thank you guys for having me on. Sorry, I yelled the whole time.
No, it's justifiable. Thanks so much for listening. You can find us on Twitter at Rewatchability, Facebook.com/Rewatchability. I forgot to mention at the top of the show, our Patreon. Thank you to everybody that donates a couple bucks a month. You get the episode early without ads, and there's some other bonuses too. We did a commentary track for Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Yeah. Recently that's up there. So thank you all, everybody there. We'll be back next week with another episode. Until then, America.
Fuck yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.